Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What do you do with your spare time? Could you use the time you currently spend on TV, social networking, and other entertainment to make $1 million or to make the world a better place? Author and entrepreneur Marshall Brain was working full-time on something else when he started up the website How Stuff Works as a hobby in 1998. It is now one of the top 1,000 websites in the world, with more than 5 million unique visitors a month. In 2007, he sold that company for $250 million. Marshall Brain is in town to deliver a lecture tonight at UT Arlington entitled Your Spare Time is Your Most Important Time. Marshall, welcome to Think.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Go ahead.
Oh, and I love the name of the show. That's just, it's so succinct and perfect.
Yeah, actually, we credit senior producer Jeff Whittington with the name, and I love it too. So it's worked well for us.
Right.
Are most of us wasting our spare time?
Well, no. Because it's your spare time. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many folks are out, you know, in the audience listening to this, but your spare time is your spare time. So no one can waste it because they choose what to do with it. But there are different things you can do with your spare time that can be more lucrative than other things you do with your spare time. So if you're interested in starting businesses or writing books or starting charities or whatever, those things are going to happen in your spare time. And so if you recognize that and you kind of understand your spare time as a resource and you can use that resource in whatever way you want, then you might choose to use it differently if you were to sit and think about it.
What does it take to allow that time that you have when you're not working to earn your primary living to use it for something productive without completely burning the candle at both ends so that you just collapse?
Well, one thing to recognize is this is a simplification, but you know, if you think about a day, I mean, for most of us, you have 8 hours of workish kind of time, probably with a little padding on either end, mm-hmm. and you have 8-ish hours of sleep time, although I don't know anybody who gets 8 hours of sleep anymore. And then there's the rest, which I call play time. This is the time that you use at your discretion. And if you're, you know, we're both parents. So if you're a parent, a lot of that time goes into being...
About 7.5 hours of that time is parenting.
It can be. I would divide it into the time before the children go to bed and yeah. then the time after the children go to bed. But if you're not a parent, you know, you have a certain amount of freedom that parents don't necessarily have. So that's your resource. That 8-ish hours of playtime is your resource to use in whatever way you choose to use it. And that's sort of the starting point for understanding what's possible. So you don't necessarily have to burn the candles at both ends if, you know, if that 8 hours, or if you're a parent, you know, it might only be 2 hours, but it's still, it's two real hours. It's not cutting into your sleep time or your work time. Mm-hmm. That's your resource to work with right there. And a lot of us use that time right now to watch TV or to play video games or to, you know, do whatever you do on Facebook or, you know, whatever. You can reallocate that time effectively without it interrupting anything else. You just take away from entertainment and apply it to goals, and presto, you have a new, you know, ability, a new resource that you can use.
I want to talk about How Stuff Works, because the sort of mythology about the company is that you're this computer science teacher and you have a little spare time, you put this website online, and boom, all of a sudden it's this multi, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of company.
Was there let's dispel some of that.
Let's talk about the work that went into it and how deliberate it was for you. Was it really an accident that this thing caught on?
Well, so I like to do stuff in my free time, mm-hmm. and I would describe myself as a teacher and a writer, and I like to write. So, you know, before I started How Stuff Works, I had written maybe 8 books, and at this point I've written maybe a dozen, maybe one or two more than that, but let's call it a dozen. So let's just establish the fact that when I have free time, I usually spend it writing. because I like to do that. I like to think of things and research things and write stuff. So having finished my eighth book, I wanted to do some more writing. But the problem with books is that they're hard because you have to actually finish the whole thing before you can release it into the wild. And it's just – it's a big block of work before that moment of release as opposed to a website, which you can do very incrementally.
Right.
You can just – so this isn't mythology. This is fact that when I got done with my eighth book, I wanted to continue writing, but I didn't want to start another book at that moment in my life. And so I – you know, the web was the new – this is 1998 we're talking about, so 12-ish years ago. It's the thing that's kind of rising right now. But it's cool because it is incremental. And you can write in a weekend and actually publish something. And the miraculous thing about the web, more so today than in 1998, but the idea is that you can put this thing on the web for $10 a month-ish to get a website.
Yeah.
And you're publishing essentially to the planet. You know, like,
that's power right there.
It's unbelievable. Like, what would Gutenberg think? You know, he's like setting type and doing all this crazy stuff to produce one copy of a book and then two copies. And anyone in our sphere of listening right now could tonight get a website and can tomorrow publish to a billion-ish people. If they have any reason to want to look at your stuff, your audience is a billion people for $10 a month. That is a miracle. So I thought, well, I'll just do some stuff. I'll just write some stuff, and I will write about how things work because I'm interested in it. Mm-hmm. And I actually got a lot of enjoyment. You know, one of my tenets of if you're going to use your spare time to make something that brings you joy so that even if it doesn't work out, your byproduct of it is your own joy that you had in creating it. You know, so I didn't care if anybody read How Stuff Works or not. I was really having fun writing the articles because it forced me to go, you know, if we're going to write about how you got that book sitting there and it's got a dirigible on it, you know, or that has a fire truck on it. Right. So you're going to write about a fire truck. I know basically what a fire truck does, but I don't know the details of what a fire truck does.
Yeah.
And fire trucks are really cool. They're fascinating things. And you get into it, and maybe you go talk to a fireman, and you go read on the fire truck manufacturer's website, and you know, you do all the research, and you learn all this cool stuff. That was a joyous experience for me, and it didn't matter if zero people read it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just I enjoyed it. So it just happened that for whatever reason, after I got about 20 articles there on that little website I had built, that it became appealing to a lot more people than just me. And I don't know how much detail you want to go into it, but, you know, it went on an arc upward.
Yeah.
That, I mean, technically still continues to this day, but continues to this day largely because of the incredible group of people that assembled around the idea. And, you know, and that's its own other story is like when you start something, it actually starts to work and you can start
aggregating.
Coming together. I don't know what the better, like a group of people come together as employees and bring their talents in that are things I could never do, you know, when I was working just as one guy at his kitchen table, you know, artists and other writers and business development people and marketing people. And, you know, these people bring their talents in and the group can do so much more than I could have ever possibly done or that any one of us could have done individually. It's the group's collection of abilities that can move forward so much better. Well, and amazingly.
You know, Marshall, that strikes me as maybe the difference between you and somebody who doesn't end up getting millions upon millions of readers is for some people that letting go, even if it means you're going to get better and bigger, it's hard to let go. Obviously, you maintained control when you were first starting and you were hiring people. But was it hard to think, OK, I'm not the only guy who's going to be writing for this site?
Well, no, to answer that directly. And the side question is, Well, I'm the world's leading expert in how impossible it is to know everything, because because How Stuff Works tries to explain how everything works, and yet I know for a fact that we only scratch the surface. If you want to know how the space shuttle works, and you just start talking to NASA people, and you realize how many thousands of layers of knowledge and experience and talent and stuff went into the space shuttle. I'm never going to understand, the aerodynamics over a silica insulation tile when it's entering the atmosphere at 17,000 miles an hour. I'm never going to understand that. But there are people, that's their whole life. Those molecules, traveling over those tiles. So I know how little I know, I guess. And I also know how much better people are, let's take art. I stink at art. terrible. But the original site was all me. Mm-hmm. I drew it all as pathetically as I could. And it became, as we hired people, it became known as martial art. And there was an effort eventually to purge all martial art from the site because it was bad. I mean, it was functional, mm-hmm. but it was not pretty. And so it was all replaced with, and that's great because it looks so much better when it, that, I guess that's the thing, is that everything looks so much better or became so much better as these other people who were massively more talented in their areas assembled. Why would you not? I guess that's my perspective on it.
I like this idea that you have written about in the past, which is that if you want to make real money, you probably have to start your own business in most fields. However, if you're working for somebody else, you can treat that like free education, like paid education.
Right. It is. And a lot of companies will say that straight up when they're hiring you. I don't know if they still do, but McDonald's, the restaurant, used mm-hmm. to have a whole page on their website, which in essence said, come work for us, and we will teach you how to become a better person. Essentially, we will teach you how to advance in our organization or in any other organization you go. And so you can think of it as a junk burger flipping job, or you can think of it as an entry level position into one of the most amazing companies on the face of the planet, and I can look and learn from the inside about this amazing company and pick any company, that's at that scale. You don't get to be at that scale by being incompetent. McDonald's is an incredibly competent, well-run, any group that can bring, like a million heads of lettuce into the entire planet fresh so they taste good at lunch today. Think about the logistics of that.
Do you think they're able to hire people that, when you say it like that, it makes perfect sense. But I think it does seem that most people go in there and they're like, okay, I'm here to get my $6.50 an hour and I want to get home. And we're missing a lot of opportunity.
Well, yeah, that's pure perspective. Just like on your spare time, it's pure perspective. You can not understand the power of that free time, or you can understand this is the time I have to do anything I want. Let's make the most of it. It's all perspective.
Marshall Brain is my guest. He's an author, entrepreneur, and founder of HowStuffWorks.com. He's in town to deliver a lecture tonight at UT Arlington entitled Your Spare Time is the Most Important Time. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is entrepreneur, author, and founder of HowStuffWorks.com, Marshall Brain. He's in town to lecture tonight at UT Arlington. The talk is called Your Spare Time is Your Most Important Time. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. One of the things you recommend, Marshall, is that people who are interested in starting a business clean all the music off their iPods and download audiobooks.
I love audiobooks. So let's say you're going to start a business. Like you, well, your first step is you'd realize that your free time is a resource that you can use effectively if you choose to. Then you would say, I would like to start a business, and you might have several reasons why that's appealing to you. And then your next question is going to be, well, how in the world do I do that? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the deal? And this is like anything else. First, you have to learn the ropes. And second, you kind of have to understand that practice makes perfect. So, the first business I started didn't succeed, and that's true of most people, although the odds of success are really good. Like if you go to the Small Business Administration site, it's something like 1 in 10 companies succeed 5 years out, I think is the statistic.
And you call that good?
That's outstanding, sure, compared to almost everything else on the planet. That is excellent odds compared to a lottery ticket or, at all the other things. And you can go to sports and say, you know, how often does a person hit a home run? You know, it's probably less than 1 out of 10. Mm-hmm. You know, in our world, 1 out of 10 is pretty great odds. So you decide to do something with your free time. You decide to start a business. You hit this wall. What do I do? And the thing you do, I would call saturating your brain. Mm-hmm. What you're going to do is you're going to go and you're going to get books on businesses, and it can be anything from. Let's read about other people who started businesses. Let's read how-to books on how to start a business. Let's read case studies, in different business ideas. Whatever you are interested in reading right now, you're going to just start reading. And I think most of us, if we think about pockets of free time that are totally unused right now, the commute time is one of those pockets of free time, and maybe when you go walk in the evening because it's part of your exercise program or whatever, a lot of that time is not being used for any non-entertainment purpose. So why not reallocate it and put, do something cool with it? So you put these audiobooks on and you start saturating your brain with ideas and techniques and so on for running a business. And the first business book you listen to, let's just, you pick one out of the air. You can go to marshallbrain.com and there I'll give you a book list. You pick one. And because you don't know anything about it, you'll read through the book and half of it won't make any sense. But then you can listen to the book again and it'll, now 75% of it will make sense because you've had a chance to go through it once and now you can come back and start filling in. And then you listen to other books. And, after several months of listening to this stuff, you're going to start to, stuff is going to start to click in your head. And suddenly you're going to know a lot more than you did 3 or 6 months ago. And things are going to seem easier and more straightforward and not so mysterious anymore. And you might go on the internet and get on a forum that talks about starting businesses and ask questions and blah, blah, blah. And pretty soon you've loaded into your head instead of, Justin Bieber's greatest hits or whatever you were.
Maybe. It must be worth $1 million to somebody.
Think how much money the kid's made.
I know.
And I forget what the statistic is, but he's got the most popular video on YouTube, and it's something like, hundreds of millions of people have watched just that one video. Think, of having reached 100 million people with anything. He has accomplished things that most people dream of, kind of thing. So, but instead of, just listening to music, you've now loaded this whole set of information into your head that will then start making connections. And you'll start to look at the world through a filter that you didn't have before, which is, can I sell something to this you know, to this marketplace? Can I make something that would solve this problem? Can I write a book that would appeal to these million people? You'll start seeing things like that. And then that's when the ideas start percolating and you can start to exercise some of this stuff that you've saturated your brain with. And that, you know, that kind of demonstrates how you can turn free time into a skill that you didn't have 6 months ago.
And what's interesting about this is that except for maybe $100 or $200 worth of books, so far there's no capital investment. But a lot of businesses, it seems like you need to start with a significant amount of money. And that, especially in this economy, is a scary prospect for some people.
Yes. And so let's take the high end and come down. So mm-hmm. let's say you want to start the next JetBlue or Southwest Airlines, right? You need to lease or buy jet airplanes and, you know, hire mechanics. That's at the high end.
So if you're waiting tables right now, that is not the first place to start.
Well, it might be because if you understand the process well enough, you could create a business plan and you could go convince people with key pieces of knowledge to align themselves with you because your business plan is so awesome. Mm-hmm. And there are lots, you know, that sounds ludicrous, but there are lots of companies, and FedEx springs to mind, that started that way, where, you know, FedEx was started by a college student who wrote a paper on this new concept in package delivery. Mm-hmm. And it was so compelling that, you know, FedEx was not a small, lightweight company to start with. It, you know, it had to have a certain amount of stuff in order for it to work at all. And yet, that started with a business plan. So that's kind of the high end. The low end is, you know, I'm going to put one bubblegum vending machine in a local restaurant. You know, there's something that takes a very small amount of capital to get started. And then there's a website where it doesn't take, you know, in practical terms, it doesn't take any money at all to get started with a website. And you think, you know, like let's take Twitter or Facebook or something. Those started with, or how stuff works. Those started with single individuals creating something that resonated in a marketplace. And you, Twitter's valued at, you know, $10 billion-ish is its valuation, and Facebook's at $50 billion. They, you know, they obviously grew from where they started, but they still started with very simple ideas and very, very low amounts of capital that got the idea out and resonating so that then you could generate either interest or money and build up from that. So you don't necessarily – I mean, when you're looking at the world through your new filter, if you have no capital, the filter you apply is, okay, I'm going to look for things I can start with no capital or, you know, very low amounts of capital, or that I can get started and then will produce their own capital and I can, you know, wind it upward in a beneficial cycle. You just look for things that fit your profile.
So another thing that you talk about is writing down your goals, like physically writing them down and pasting them up somewhere that you're going to see them on a regular basis. Is it better to say, I want to start the new Facebook or something akin to that that's worth $50 billion? Or do you have to start with the small steps and sort of break it out for yourself?
I think that depends on the person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not the sort of person who would say I'm going to start the next Facebook because that's too big a step for me. But that, like if you were to look at Sam Walton as he was starting Walmart, well, let's look at Sam Walton as he was starting Walmart. Sam Walton, when he was starting Walmart, started with one, what we would call a five and dime.
A variety store.
Yeah, you know, a million years ago, but not a million, you know, 40 years ago, say. He was in a small town in Arkansas. He leased an existing five and dime kind of store, which would be like a dollar store today.
Mm-hmm.
He revamped the product line in there to appeal more to people, and he tweaked with the prices and stuff. And he got that one tiny little store working. So did Sam Walton write on his, you know, index card, to be specific, I advocate writing your goals on an index card and putting it on your bathroom mirror so you see it when you wake up and when you go to bed. Did he write on it, I'm going to start the business is going to become the largest employer in the United States, and you know, we'll have a footprint over the entire globe, and we'll change entire towns and cities. I doubt that's what he wrote. You know, he probably wrote on it, I'm going to make this five and dime work. Mm-hmm. And from there, I'm going to see what the next step is. So that's the kind of thought process I would go through. Like, what can I reasonably, you know, imagine accomplishing in the next however much time is my time scale. But if you're the sort of person who loves those great big brass rings, then go for it. It's your, you know, your list of goals. So, but then you would break it down. What are the steps to getting to be a $50 billion company? And you'd look at your littler goals on along the way.
What's your philosophy about luck?
I'm a huge, huge believer in luck. So Larry King has a great quote on luck that I'm going to have to paraphrase because I don't have it right in front of me. But it's something along the lines of anybody who claims they succeeded without the beneficial effects of luck, you know, is kidding themselves, really. So here's what happens. If you haven't started a business, then luck can't find you, you know, in the sense of making a business grow.
Right.
You have to be in the game, really, for luck to have an effect. And then, so you get in the game, and now luck can express itself, and then your job is to take advantage of it, you know, when it strikes. And a lot of times, even when something looks like bad luck, like Ben and Jerry's has a great story about how they got, I'm going to shorten it to one sentence, but they got forced out of the whole New York City marketplace by a competitor that went to their distributor and said, you're not going to distribute them anymore because we don't want to compete against them. And, you know, the big competitor had leverage over the distributor. Well, Ben and Jerry's, that could have been a disaster, mm-hmm. right? They're totally cut off from their biggest close market. Well, they instead were able to turn that around and make a publicity event out of it. And that's what gave them national recognition. You know, so it's not always the case that it even looks like luck when it happens to you. So you get yourself in the game, stuff happens, and now you make what you can make of it. And in the case of how stuff works, one of the lucky things that was there was at that moment in history, everybody, any media outlet had a website of the week or, you know, cool site of the day or, you know, whatever they called it. And so How Stuff Works got picked up by one of those. Mm-hmm. And then they're a little bit incestuous.
Yeah, everybody reads everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. And so How Stuff Works just happened to be popular enough that it made all these rounds. It was in USA Today, and it was in – and each time it got one of those big hits, it's – you know, there was a huge spike, but then its plateau rose up as – you know, you know, it might have had 1,000 visitors a day before, and then, you know, there's 100,000 people that come in, and now it's got 3,000 visitors mm-hmm. a day because some of those people stick around and stuff. And so, well, it went through 100 big spikes like that, and the plateau went way up in a relatively short period of time. That's luck, right? But who cares? It's just, you know, if I had never written the site, it never would have happened. And now that same kind of luck can happen on Facebook or on Twitter or in the blogosphere, or, you know, you can get picked up by some group of people who resonate you from one level of traffic to a completely stratospheric level of traffic in a fairly short period of time.
How important is it that you love what you're doing?
Well, that goes back to the joy thing we were talking mm-hmm. about. I advocate picking something that will bring great joy because I've had a whole bunch of ideas that didn't work, and mm-hmm. we could go into those.
Talk about some of those. Did you think this is going to be my million, or did you just think this will be fun? Or,
well, you know, everything you invest time in, you would like to think it would, you know, be popular with people or would take off or something. Well, let me give you an example. I did what I would call a lark or a crazy idea, which was I thought if you go to Williamsburg, you can see how people lived 200 years ago, mm-hmm. if you've ever been to Williamsburg.
Yeah, and they're sort of acting it out, and you come in as a 21st century person, but they're speaking to you as right. if you were one of them.
Right. So, but we don't really know that that's how people lived 200 years ago mm-hmm. because we don't really have any record of it or anything.
Yeah.
And so let's say I wanted to know how my great-great-great-grandparents lived 200-ish years ago. I really wanted to know it. What I'd like to have is a time capsule from them, right? So I came up with this crazy idea or lark or whatever, that I would create a video time capsule of life in the Brain family in 2010. And mm-hmm. I'd put them up on YouTube with the intent that my great-great-great-grandchildren and anybody else who's interested would be able to go back and look and say, here's what life really was like. So think of what life would have been like 200 years ago. A person wakes up. And, you know, in America today, we wake up and we walk into our heated and air-conditioned restroom with toilet paper and a toilet, you know, and that's our first thing.
And an index card on the mirror to read our inspirational goals.
Our toothbrush and running water. And all. What did it look like 200 years ago? It did not look like that. And what will it look like 200 years from now?
Yeah.
It won't look anything like that because you'll probably have robots that carry you. Or I don't know what's going to happen, but it'll be very, very different.
Yeah.
And so I've started making these little videos. No one cares. Like it has, I mean, family members care. I have videos that only 25 people have watched. And so if you look at that from a business standpoint or something, it was an abject failure. But if you look at it from how much fun we've had creating those as a family, which has been awesome, and if you look at them from, like, my kids will be able to show them to their kids 30 or 40 years from now and say, I mean, just in 30 years, iPhones will look ridiculous, right? What we use.
My first cell phone looks ridiculous.
Right. Like, whatever we have today in 30 years will look nuts. So it'll be fun for the kids.
Marshall Brain is my guest. He's an entrepreneur, author, and founder of HowStuffWorks.com. He's in town to lecture tonight at UT Arlington. That talk is entitled, Your Spare Time is Your Most Important Time. You can find more information at uta.edu or on the Think page of kera.org. If you want to join us and ask a question, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is entrepreneur, author, and founder of HowStuffWorks.com, Marshall Brain. He's speaking tonight at UT Arlington. You can find information about that on the Think page of kera.org. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. The email address is think@kera.org. So, first of all, Marshall, I'll say that your idea about a time capsule for future generations, I'm already making plans for what my family can do this weekend. I think it sounds great. But let me ask you this. How do you we love nerdy things in our family.
Okay.
We make silly videos and whatever. But how do you bounce back from something you thought would be a real success? Because even if there's no financial cost to it, it's got to be kind of a blow to your ego, to your self-confidence, if you thought you had the million-dollar idea and it turned out not to be.
Well,
it helps that you made $250 million already, I guess. But
Well, let's point out that that was a 12-year process, and that was a 12-year process that was made possible almost not at all by me, but by a group of fantastic people that were able to bring all their business knowledge and stuff mm-hmm. into making that happen. So, failing, if you want to call it failure, I think that's a bad word, but I don't have a better one. So failing is just a part of the process, and it's a part of the process with anything. So you invest a certain amount of creative energy in mm-hmm. something, and it sometimes is frustrating when no one cares. But I I guess, two things. One is do it so that it brings you its own joy, and that way you don't – you have something that – you know, like the time capsule thing I said was a lark, but we've had so much fun with it, it really doesn't matter that no one else cares.
Yeah.
But the second part of it is you learn from that. And I guess the perspective you have on it is, okay, I did that. That didn't work. Let's look at it and figure out why it didn't work. And now this next thing I do is going to be that much better, stronger, faster because of what I learned from this one. And you just put it in a positive rather than a negative light. And then you pick up and try the next thing. That's my perspective on it anyway.
It does seem true that the things you learn by making a mistake yourself as opposed to reading about somebody else's mistake or whatever are really the lessons that stick with you, and the things that you don't. You never do something quite the same way.
Right. Well, that's true of anything. Experiencing it directly is very different from vicariously. So that's true if you want to go visit the pyramids in Egypt or anything. But when you go out and give it a try and it doesn't work, you have two choices. You can tweak it. You can try, like, I'm going to change it and change it and change it and change it until I get something that does work. Or you change it a number of times and it still doesn't work. And then you say, okay, I don't know why, but this didn't work. And I'm just going to move on to my next project a little bit wiser. It's purely perspective, though, how you're going to let it affect you and make you feel, I guess.
Clearly, you are diligent and you are optimistic. Do you think you are more able to roll with the punches than other people might be?
I think I have a poor memory. And it's true, I do have a poor memory. So when stuff doesn't work, if I can just wait a week, the sting will all be gone, let's say. And that's not that. That is a unique part of having no memory. That's how I became a writer, is because I have such a poor memory that I would write things down.
So that's true, actually. You really don't.
I have a poor memory, yes. So my first book started with just a set of notes of all this stuff I couldn't remember, and then that got fleshed out into a set of handouts for students, and then that got the attention of a publisher, and that is where I got my first book contract from, was because I have a poor memory. So I think that helps you roll with the punches because stuff just, fades quickly. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to sound repetitive, but just reframe it in a positive light. Just take don't say I failed, say I learned. And just get it into a different mold inside your head where you can look at it. I have something all the time that's failing. That's just part of the process. You have to try 9 times to find the 10th one. I don't know how you want to frame it, but you just have to frame it until you feel comfortable with it.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Michael on the line in Midlothian. Hi, Michael.
Oh, hey. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
I have a question for Mr. Brain. I read a short story or novelette of his several years ago on the internet about using technology to uplift people or to oppress people. And I think I am seeing what he wrote actually coming to pass, especially in the retail and fast food industries, as it being, as sort of people becoming more made almost into a mechanical part of the machine by automation. And I was wondering if he had any thoughts about the ideas in his book coming to pass.
Okay, excellent. Well, it's good to meet you, Michael. So that book is called Mana. You can read it on marshallbrain.com. It's free online. Anybody can read it tonight if they want to. And it talks about how technology could either essentially turn us all into prisoners because we all lose our jobs to robots and we end up in welfare dormitories in a desert somewhere. Or we could understand that robots essentially allow human beings the opportunity to go on perpetual vacation if we were to allocate and deploy them like that. And so, you know, the two worlds it explores is this welfare dormitory world and this world of perpetual vacation that are both possible strictly based on our philosophy about what we're going to do with robotic technology. And since last week, Watson just basically told us our time has
– our days are numbered.
Yeah, essentially. That, I mean, we need to start watching our backs pretty closely because here we've been beaten at Jeopardy, which would 10 years ago have been utterly impossible.
Yeah, for people who haven't really heard the story, it's a much bigger deal than was it Big Blue?
The chess machine.
Because that chess is still a very mathematical game. But answering questions in Jeopardy requires understanding of syntax and a lot of different things.
Yeah.
It's a leap forward.
We could do a whole show on just how amazing that accomplishment was. But in one sentence, they took normal text, like all of the English version of Wikipedia and the Bible and a movie database and a dictionary and a thesaurus. They didn't mark it up. They didn't structure it. They didn't put it in a database. They just took raw text and they fed that into this machine and wrote the code that let it parse that and understand it. Or we'll put air quotes around that because it's completely different from our understanding. But this machine could digest a trillion characters, approximately a million books, and to put that into perspective, 20 miles long shelf of books. It digested that and could now respond to questions in 3 seconds out of that knowledge base. Well, that's going to be applied to medical information, to legal information, to, you know, all kinds of knowledge bases and stuff. And a whole bunch of jobs are going to evaporate as a result of this over a 5 or 10 year time frame. So we have the opportunity, as these robots start taking huge numbers of jobs, like all of Walmart could be done by robots in, you know, 10 or 20 years. All of construction will be done by robots, you know, and millions and millions of people are going to lose their jobs. The short version of that book is, if we understand that and rethink how the world works, we can all go on perpetual vacation as a result of that. But if we don't, then as each job category evaporates, those people have nowhere else to go and they end up on welfare. And it's appalling.
You don't strike me as a guy who would enjoy perpetual vacation.
Oh, well, think about just anybody in the audience. If someone were to give you a $100,000 a year stipend, okay, here, you have $100,000 a year to do whatever you want, what would you do? How many of us would... I mean, there is a group of us who would say, okay, I'm going to go sip margaritas by the pool all day for the rest of my life. And that's okay if that's what you want to do with your stipend. But there's a whole group of people who would say, wow, I'm going back to college to do this, or I'm going to write this book, or I'm going to go do the art I've always wanted to do. Or, you know, they would take that as an opportunity to express themselves at such a higher level than they're able to express themselves now. Millions of people would do that. It's not necessarily what we think of as vacation now, because when we go on vacation now, we only do it for 1 week and we want to have fun during that period of time.
So it's productive growth.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you could express your humanity in so many ways if you had the freedom to do that.
Let's go to the phones once again. Now, this time we'll speak with Debbie in Colleyville. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. Hello. I was interested in the comments that the speaker made earlier. I myself am looking to start a small business. His comment about delegating the responsibilities of website development, marketing, and so forth by increasing the intellectual staff to help you drive that business. At what point, since our speaker indicates that he has had several businesses that have started and maybe not made it or not been as profitable as he wanted. At what point in time do you make the decision to invest in all the extra intellectual help when you're just starting a business?
Thanks for your call. Any guidelines?
So it's good to meet you, Debbie. And so you look at your business, whatever it is, a business does something and makes money. So you can look at the rate at which it's making money and decide when you have capital to deploy on new stuff, whatever that new stuff is. And when you, as a business owner, you're thinking about this, there's pieces of equipment you need. There's, you know, maybe retail space you need. There's, you know, accounting help you need. You know, there's a set of things that are there. But the other part is the speculative money that you're going to spend on new stuff. So to use How Stuff Works as an example, we knew that if we hired another writer, let's say, that writer would produce more articles. We know how much money each article makes, and so it makes sense to hire a new writer. And the same thing is true of artists or editors or whatever. But business development people, that's more of research and development money. You mm-hmm. don't necessarily know what will come of it, but you reach a point where you have disposable income that you invest in that in the hope that it'll create something big. And you look at your budget to find that disposable income, and then you consciously deploy it, you know, with a goal in mind. So you might say, you know, I'm going to hire, you know, a business development person, somebody who doesn't, you know, you don't have a direct line of work for them to do that you know will make money, but I'm going to hire this person in the hope that X, Y, and Z is going to come of that. And you understand that that money might go down the drain. That's part of the process.
Last thing I want to ask you, are you always keeping a list of things you wonder about and you want to explore just for your own personal curiosity?
Every day.
Would you write it down, or do you put it in your phone or something? What do you do?
I have a little spiral notebook that sits next to me at my desk, and I just write it. You know, anything I read, like on the airplane today, the article I read was on how extras work in movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people who are schlepping suitcases.
Yeah, they're in the background,
right?
Or whatever.
Well, I never thought about that. It was a fascinating article. So, you know, that goes on my list of things I could write about that. You know, it was actually pretty interesting stuff. So
we will look for it on the site and elsewhere. Thank you so much, Marshall Brain. Marshall Brain is an entrepreneur and author and founder of HowStuffWorks.com. He speaks tonight at UT Arlington on your spare time being your most important time. It's been such a pleasure, Marshall. Thank you so much.
And that's open to the public.
Super. So. Thanks for listening. I'm Chris Boyd. Have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.